It's Friday!
Okay! Tokyo! South America! Australia! France! Germany!
UK!
Africa!
Here we go! Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Oh, yeah, I'm here. A little more drum loop than I usually let roll through there, but and you know, got started about a minute late. I confess, I was making a cup of frothy, foamy decaf espresso, just to kind of celebrate. And not gonna, you know, booze is out of the question. But I am. I'm sort of celebrating here because, as I noted on social media earlier today, this is the first time in the 17-year history, the 17-plus-year history of this program, that I will have done two entire broadcast weeks without a cigarette. And if that's not worth celebrating, what the hell is? And in addition, I've gotten to where, as I noted, I can have a cup of coffee, and even if it is decaf, and just save the emails. I know, it's not decaf, because you don't want to hear me under the influence of caffeine on this program. That's why. So, and it's not, you know, it's one of those things that we associate with. You know, coffee and a cigarette, that kind of thing. But instead of coffee and a cigarette, what I'll do is I'll have coffee and a nicotine pouch.
You're friendly with those.
Yeah. Hi, dear. Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Coffee and a coffee flavored. Nicotine pouch, as a matter of fact. You know, or maybe not. I thought I had some coffee-flavored nicotine pouches sitting around here, but I don't. So it looks like it'll be coffee and a, that'll make it Viennese, won't it? Coffee and a cinnamon-flavored nicotine pouch. That'll work out. Yum, yum. So here we are. We've made it to Friday on the front porch. It's the 25th day of September, 2020. Hi, I'm Bob. Cigarette-free Bob. Cigarette-free, newly re-grandpod Bob. Newly opod Bob. Little guy's getting along wonderfully. And my daughter wants out of the hospital, but they're not going to turn her loose until tomorrow, I guess, at the earliest. She's not happy about that. She wants to be back home. But, well, just the same. That's how it goes. But every... exactly, Flavio. No, we don't want Bob sounding like Ben Shapiro. To be fair, though, for me to sound like Ben Shapiro would require more than caffeine. it would probably require a structural change to my physical integrity. Yeah. But we don't. We don't want that at all. Yeah, good observation, Flavio. Flavio gets the first cowbell of the evening. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. No. So thanks go out to our subscribers for the 25th day of the month as we wind down toward the end of September. That means thanks to Mark, and thanks to Mark. That's what the 25th means. The 25th belongs to Marks. The fraternity of Marks has the 25th nailed down as far as subscriptions are concerned. So just a reminder, if you happen to be another Mark out there, and you'd like to take advantage of having your first month subscription doubled, well, jump in with Mark and Mark. And thanks to our buddy Tony and Chico's offer, your first month subscription will be doubled. I mean, the way it's going, if you subscribe today at $90, Tony and Chico will double that. But $10 gets doubled to $20 gets doubled to $40, up to and including $90. So that's where that stands. Like I said, it's Friday on the front porch, and here in about an hour we will go over to the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves, and we'll gather together around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable with Sparky as moderator. And we'll see what's on folks' minds here at the end of this final full week of September. Final full week, because September ends on, I believe, Wednesday of next week. Yes. So be gathering your thoughts together as to what you'd like to address, any stories that we haven't talked about. Over the course of this week, you're mighty welcome to bring to the ongoing Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable conversation. So that takes care of that bit of housekeeping. Let's see, is there anything else? Bob Kincaid, amateur Uber driver, was back on duty today and will be back on duty this evening. Only today we're not on the 4 to 12. It's a little bit merciful. Maybe that's because I'll have to have him at work at 7 or 8 in the morning or something insane like that. Tomorrow being Saturday. But, no, I took Ferg to work at, he works the 2 to 10 today. So I'll be picking him up over at the Rippy Mart at, 10 o'clock this evening. And, again, I don't know what we're doing tomorrow, but tomorrow's Saturday, so doesn't much matter. But I'll be out of here at, I guess I'll leave here about 9:30, but we've got plenty of time for some Jim Dandy good conversation, to wrap up the week this evening. No, Brother Deacon, I was not on Cautious Politician time. I was on coffee pulling time. That's what that was. That's why I was a minute late to the microphone. And, of course, thank you very kindly to Joey. Congrats, Grandpa. Again, congratulations. And as I just texted, please make sure you read the final update version of Joey's journal tonight. Okie doke. I will make dead certain of that. And there it is. Does anybody, Joey asks, does anybody remember a great pop group from the 80s by the name of Tears for Fears? I personally loved that group, and maybe part of the reason was that they were from Sheffield, England, the birthplace of my great-grandmother. Also, the namesake of the town, oddly enough, and this is not any this is not any reflection on the quality or nature of Joey's journal today, but also the namesake of the little town across the river from where I was born, that also happens to be the birthplace of no less than Addison Mitch McConnell. No shit, he was born in Sheffield, Alabama, named for Sheffield, England. And Sheffield, of course, in England, famous for its steel and cutlery. But anyway, Joey says, Sheffield, England, the birthplace of my great-grandmother, Lily. My great-grandmother came over right before World War I on a ship that was later sunk by the Germans on its very next voyage back to the States. No, it was not the Titanic. Was it perhaps the Lusitania? Anyways, as I watched the orange monster down in the Orange State last night just throw a string of whopper lies to the no-mask maggots, I couldn't help but hear Tears for Fears singing their hit song, Lies, 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 Yeah. Oh, no, Joey, no, no, nobody. That wasn't, no, Tears for Fears was Everybody Wants to Rule the World. Lies, 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 Yeah was the Thompson Twins. Sorry, this is a old 80s DJ kind of thing, but yeah, that was the Thompson Twins. I remember when they played West Virginia University in Morgantown, and I got to run around and hobnob with them a little bit. That was the Thompson Twins, Joey. It was just one whopper after, regardless, at the COVID super spreader event in Florida. It was just one whopper after another as Trump was playing all his greatest hits. You know, the one hit, we're going to build a great wall and Mexico's going to pay for it. Well, the only wall Trump has helped build is the one on Wall Street. Oh, wait, no, easy there, Joey. He's also built a wall around the United States, but the problem is it's not keeping anybody out. It's keeping us in. Because U.S. Americans aren't welcome anywhere else on the planet, unless it's maybe like Turkey. Or maybe Brazil. I don't know. But anyway, so there's that. Then there was the one Joey notes where he claims he has the greatest economy, except for those 4 million jobs that are never coming back because I fucked up the pandemic efforts to stop the virus. Only he didn't say that. However, the best lie was the one where Trump claimed he had a great new health care plan. Much better than Obamacare, and I'll roll it out in just 2 weeks. Trump actually said that almost 5 years to the day ago in 2015. I guess two weeks is a lot longer than I thought. Kind of ruined that for you, Joey. Sorry about that. I guess 2 weeks is a lot longer than I thought. Well, time is fluid, right? Yeah, says Joey. Lies, 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 yeah. Lies, lies, lies. Yeah. Yeah, indeed. That almost makes me want to I have to double check myself here. Make sure I was right. Yeah, I was right. Here's what Joey's talking about. Everybody backwards skate. Yeah, Trey in Kentucky stand telling me, you're right, Bob. It is. It's the Thompson Twins. But that song, I was playing that as a bumper way back in the early aughts in the bad old days of terrestrial radio when George W. Bush was telling a lie a day. Mm-hmm. Joey notes, yeah, and Tears for Fears had a song called King for Just One Day as well. And, of course, Trump wants to be king for the rest of his life. Yes, most of the maggots had no masks on and were crawling all over each other. Oh, yeah, it was butthole to belly button, LARPing and smollicking, grabulating and lollygagging and spraying and spewing and honking and praying and grunting. Yeah, all over the place. What's that, Giraffrey? Giraffrey says, in the gentlemanly English of my great-grandmother Lily, I didn't know your great-grandmother Lily was a gentleman, Joey. Here, let me see if we can approximate great-grandmother Lily.
I presume the maggots realize that Trump can no longer mask the truth, so why wear one?
That, Jeffrey, was bloody good. This has been Joey's Journal, complete with corrections and additions. For Friday on the Front Porch, the 25th day of September, with Giraffe yelping,
herd mentality, my tall tale. More like herd mendacity.
Indeed, indeed. And hey, we're not doing fundraising this week, but when somebody offers, I'm not going to reject it. Joey and Giraffe have kindly put forward a $50 challenge to assist in defraying the cost earlier this week of Uber Bob's new Uber tires. So thank you. If anybody would like to jump in and help knock out that $50 challenge, it would be much appreciated. Thanks, Joey. Thanks, Giraffe. Thompson Twins, Steve in New York says, all of a sudden I have really poofy big hair parted down the middle with a white fake suit jacket with the sleeves pushed up to the middle of my forearms. Wait, no, poofy hair, white fake suit jacket? That's not the Thompson Twins. Oh, no. That's something else entirely. White fake suit jacket with the sleeves pushed up. We all know what that is. Yeah. Everybody's already hearing it. You know you are. The Ray-Bans. Actually, that ain't it, though. That's something else entirely. That's kind of weird. Maybe this is it. There it is. Yeah. The Miami Vice theme. Steve, I never knew you were that cool. Did you have the Ray-Bans and the white jacket? Yeah. Oh, God, enough shenanigans, enough fooling around, no, there's never enough. We got to do things like this just to sort of keep us in good humor. Oh, well, Steve says, I just meant the 80s in general. The 80s in general. Well, all week long, ever since the autumnal equinox, I haven't been able to get the boys of summer out of my head. I feel it in the air. Summer's out of reach. Yep. Oh, well. So, anyway, the usual stuff applies as far as Friday on the Front Porch is concerned. Namely, if you'd like to participate therein, there is a great big, easy to use button right at the top of the page at headon.live. And if you press that button, if you click that button, well, you will be transported immediately to the Skype group, wherein now in about, 40 minutes or so, we will fire up the conversation. Oh, wait, White Jacket Puffs, says Jack in Shreveport. No, that's Boss Hog. I'm sorry, but there ain't no way I'm playing just a good old boy. No, I ain't going to play that because I'm enjoying this Friday so far. Yeah. Can't make me. Oh, and just a quick update. You know how yesterday we had the clip of COVID Caligula?
You know, they found all those ballots that had Trump on them, and they were floating in the river. They were in the water. They were in the ocean. They were in the Dead Sea, or was it the Great Salt Lake? They were somewhere wet.
Well, actually, it was Luzerne County, Pennsylvania. And he was having a conniption on Fox News Radio, Fox News TV Radio Rwanda yesterday. And just so we can all understand real plainly, like, there were 9 discarded ballots from Luzerne County, Pennsylvania. How did they come to be discarded, we may wonder? Well, they got discarded by a contract worker who was assigned to help sort the mail in Luzerne County, Pennsylvania. That contract worker was actually following directions. The ballots themselves were not mail-in ballots. They were not absentee ballots. No. They were, in fact, military ballots. Well, the folks in Luzerne County, Pennsylvania, immediately made contact with the government, and they told officials of the federal government, and the maggots that they reported to immediately turned it into a great big stinking political nothing burger. But the Washington Post had the story. Because these ballots were returned in envelopes similar to absentee ballot requests, not absentee ballots, election officials opened them. And when they opened them, if the ballots weren't also in an interior envelope that protected the actual vote, then they would have qualified under the rules as naked ballots. That means ballots that have been sent in that don't protect the intent of the voter. Well, interestingly, that idea of naked ballots was one of those things that the maggots went into court to piss and moan about. The Pennsylvania Republican Party, alongside the maggot campaign, filed a lawsuit in court in PA that said that no one should be able to count naked ballots. Guess what? Team Maggot and the Pennsylvania GOP won the lawsuit which they filed. Yes. And so when these naked ballots were discovered, they got chucked in the trash per the request of the Pennsylvania GOP and the maggot campaign, and per the order of the court of competent jurisdiction, which Team Maggot and the PAGOP had sought out. So in short, Nitwit Nero was pissing and moaning about something that his own people caused to happen. So if, in fact, military ballots were thrown out, they were thrown out at the behest of President Dipshit Donnie Dumbass. How about that? Anybody surprised? Because, well, I'm not. Likely, you're not either. And a legal update coming out of Illinois. We had thought he wasn't gonna, but now he is. The alleged terrorist murderer, the alleged terrorist who committed murder, Kyle Rittenhouse, the 17-year-old whose mama took him to Wisconsin so he could kill him some Antifa and some Black Lives Matter. Well, he decided not to waive his right to extradition, and instead, the lawyer for the little terrorist has informed the judge in Lake County, Illinois, a judge by the name of Paul Novak, during a hearing online, that they wish to contest extradition from Illinois to Wisconsin. He's been in juvie, Killer Kyle has, for about a month. Yeah, how about that? Oh, he was going to mount a self-defense. He was going to mount a self-defense defense. We're eager to speak to the charges, and the truth's going to... No, Your Honor, we're going to fight extradition after all. This is not the real Kyle Rittenhouse you're looking for. Oh, for fuck's sake. He's been charged with shooting three men. In the protest that followed the arguably murder of Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin. He's become a cause celeb for the right wing, of course. They see him as a hero, protecting freedom. The only problem is you can't engage in self-defense when you fire the first shots, when you go looking to shoot someone. Yeah. And in Wisconsin, recall that if he is convicted, he faces life in prison if he is tried as an adult. But he's in no hurry to face the people of the state of Wisconsin in the form of a jury, tried and true. Mm-mm, not even. Jeremy in Vermont says, be kind to the 80s. December the 8th, 1980, soon to be 40 years ago. Oh, that'll be me as well, says Jeremy. By the way, an Uber tip and 2 weeks death stick free are inbound as well. They have landed. Thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. That's a tremendous help and a tremendous encouragement. Thank you so much. I don't know where it all went, but I am, somehow or another, saving money by not smoking. It's just that whatever money I'm saving is going somewhere else. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you very much. Thank you to Ralphs in Wisconsin for getting us started on Joey and Giraffe's Lies, 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 Yeah challenge. There's $40 to go on that. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you very kindly. And not fake, says Ron and Raleigh. Those jackets are called unconstructed, i.e. without padding or linings. I was quite the clothes horse in the 80s. Open weave papagallos and no socks. Oh, those were the days. I remember those open weave papagallos. I never quite had the sense of cool to pull those off, or to put them on, for that matter. Speaking of which, I had a note from Ron earlier. I have a question. I need it answered, says Ron. As you know, I'm not a big fan of Joe Biden, even though I will be voting for him. Joe came to Congress the first year I could vote. He came to Congress as an anti-busing advocate. He made friends with not two of Congress's most virulent racists, Herman Talmadge and John Eastland. I found out recently he was also fast friends with Jesse Helms, another racist. My question is it that easy for white people to overlook racism in people they befriend? I had a fellow who called a friend. I called friend for 20-plus years. He told me that he thought that Trayvon Martin deserved what he got. I haven't spoken to him since. If anyone I know espoused racist ideas, I'd cut them loose in a heartbeat. I appreciate your thought process. Am I wrong for thinking the way I do? Let me know. Well, let's see here. I share about 99% of the sentiment that Ron in Raleigh has espoused. And generally speaking, I don't have any truck with people I find out to be racist. I cut them loose too. And as a white person, I recognize that it's baked in to me as well. And I try to be conscious of it and to override it and to defeat it. So there's that. There's no excuse making to be had for Joe Biden, except to say this. The Senate is and always has been a weird bastion of collegiality. Biden entered the Senate quite possibly as the young, I don't know if it's the fact, but quite possibly as the youngest person, youngest man ever to do so. And he began trying to do what, and that's the way the Senate, see, we have a Senate now where people don't speak to each other. We have a Senate now where, and if I were there, which I'm not, I would find it no challenge whatsoever to never say so much as go piss up a rope to the likes of Chinless Mitch McConnell or Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, or John Cornholio, or Joni Breadbags on the Feet, Hog D. Baller Ernst, or Precious Lindsay. Oh, I don't know. I might reach out to Lindsay for his flaming rum punch recipe. I confess, I might do that. Because if anybody in the Senate of the United States has a fabulous flaming rum punch recipe, it's going to be Lindsey Graham. Out you pixies go! Yeah, get me. I'm giving out wings. Cowbell to no, you can't use the internet and cheat either. You know where that line comes from. That's also where flaming rum punch comes from. Tom Cotton wouldn't care to speak to him. That nasty old ignorant racist woman from Mississippi, Cindy Hyde Smith. Yeah. My life would not be at all negatively impacted if I never spoke to her either. Might speak to, say, Richard Shelby long enough to say, you know, a lot of people may have forgotten that you're a fucking turncoat and a and a Benedict Arnold and a betrayer, but I haven't. Not much beyond that, though. What in God's name would I have to say to that weird little religious maniac, Marco Rubio? You see, the list goes on and on and on. Rapiolito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, be buddies with him. The one thing that I agreed with Nitwit Nero on, and it was something he said in the past week or so, about nominating Rapiolito to the Supreme Court, he said,
I'd get all the Republican votes because they want to see a true conservative on the Supreme Court, and I'd get all the Democrat votes because they just want to be rid of Ted Cruz.
He just can't stop shitting on Rapiolito. And Rapiolito just can't stop sticking his nose up Trump's ass in undying gratitude. And that's the Senate we have now. And that's largely why the Senate gets absolutely not a fucking thing done. Because the Senate in its past, in its dysfunctional past, prided itself on its functionality. Its collegiality. Its chumminess. In the worst of times, say the mid-19th century in the Senate of the United States, while members of the House were beating the shit out of each other and challenging each other to duels with pistols at 20 paces or 10, in some cases actually using long guns instead, well, the Senate, even though it was dysfunctional back then, prided itself on the fact that while they didn't like each other, they weren't just outright brawling like the House was. They considered themselves the more mature of the two bodies, you see. Mm-hmm. And for the longest time, that's how business got done in the Senate. If you have work to do lobbying senators, you'll find yourself at some point in time in Washington, D.C., going through the metal detectors and into the Dirksen Senate office building. That building named for a famous then Republican senator from Illinois, Everett Dirksen. I think I've got all those facts straight. Who received the honor of having the building named after him because even though he was a Republican, he was not afraid to reach across the aisle, make deals, and try to do the nation's business with people from the opposite political party. But again, all of that ended beginning with the ascension of amateur paleontologist Newton Leroy Gingrich. And the effectiveness on air of Russell Rusty Rush Limbaugh, he of the draft dodging deferments based upon the festering cyst made of hair, pus, and feces that was on his Republican bottom when his country needed him. Oh, yeah, there's another one I wouldn't care to speak to if I were in the Senate. You're right, Mike in Cascadia says, how about Marsha? Goodness, Blackburn. Nope. I'll take a pass on Marsha. Goodness, Blackburn. Mike sent that in saying, I just wanted to hear you say, goodness. you got your wish, Mike. And Mike says, put me in for $25 toward Joey and Giraffe's lies, 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 yeah challenge. Thank you. What about, says Ron and Raleigh, would you speak to Rick Skeletor Scott of Florida? Or Thom Tillis and Richard, I didn't cheat, Burr of North Carolina? Or Tim Yassamassa Scott of South Carolina? Probably not. And that would make me part of the problem. Because the dysfunction of the United States Senate is a problem. Of course, the fact that the Senate is designed in such a way that cattle in Montana and Wyoming and Idaho, potatoes in Idaho, have more actual Democratic representation in the Senate than do the people of the entire state of California. Right. Yeah, what's that number? 37% of the population of this country lords it over the other 63% because of the way the Senate is designed? Yeah. So, Ron, I guess the answer to your question is it's not so much just forgetting racism as it was that Joe Biden was taught to operate in the Senate in the way that the Senate at that time operated and actually got shit done. The fact that he was trying to log roll with some unreconstructed, unrepentant racists is a black mark against his name in the long run, but it is also marks him as a product of his times. And those times are long gone. And the other part of that is that, well, Eastland was a Democrat. He was a member of the caucus to which Joe Biden, newly arrived in the Senate, had become a member. They were both Democrats. They were talking within their caucus. It's not like reaching out a laurel wreath of peace and friendship as a Democrat, reaching that out to, trying to think of another one, John Kennedy of Louisiana, and pulling back a bloody stump. No. Steve in New York has a list of a couple of people that he would reach out to. Steve says, I'd reach out to Ted Cruz to punch him in the nose. And I'd speak to Mitt Romney to offer him a spine and a conscience. Maybe a cup of coffee, too. Piping hot. Lee in New York asks, would you be concerned about working with Susan Collins? I wouldn't. Susan Collins is one of those people that people speak to. Apparently, my senator, Joe Manchin, has a magnificent relationship with Sue. After all, she gave him cover to go ahead and vote for Brat Kavanaugh. Yeah. So there's that. Flavio asks, what makes you think extradition to Wisconsin will change the outcome for Rittenhouse? For all we know, he'll be coddled in Wisconsin, too. For all we know, he's a hero to the Kenosha PD. Hell, they'll even take him to Burger King if he wants. Sure, sure. But he can't be tried for the murder in Illinois, Flavio. Because it did not happen in Illinois' jurisdiction. The only way to try him is to try him in Wisconsin. And he will not succeed in fighting extradition. He's just trying to play the process out. This will probably serve as fundraising fodder for him. In other words, it's a process of ginning up more money for his lawyer. I assume his lawyer is not a public defender. They will not reach, and maybe this is important to discuss, they will not reach the merits of the case in the extradition hearing. The extradition hearing will be limited solely to the question of, are you Kyle Rittenhouse, and are you the Kyle Rittenhouse, date of birth, social security number, whatever, of given address, who is wanted in connection to three shootings in Kenosha, Wisconsin? That's it. Now, the old adage applies, the old lawyer adage applies, that if you have the facts, you pound on the facts, and if you have the law, you pound on the law, and if you have the neither, you pound on the table. That means, in turn, that there will be a lot of table pounding. In Kyle Rittenhouse's extradition hearing, but eventually the judge will say, nope, because see, there's a writ of, there's an extradition warrant, and it comes on, it arrives on parchment, and it's got a ribbon seal on it, and Spencerian script and hand, all that shit, and it says, to His Excellency the Governor of Illinois, etc., etc., and lists the request that the state of Wisconsin be given, have the body, the living body of Kyle Rittenhouse turned over to it for trial. That's it. So it's not really a question of favorability, Flavio, in answer to your question. Will he be treated like some little conquering hero? Possibly, especially if he is tried in the county wherein the crime occurred. Or, for that matter, anywhere in Wisconsin. Because, sadly, one of the summary effects of the Koch brothers' efforts to break Wisconsin, and they were successful, was to turn Wisconsin into Alabama North. Yeah. Coffee for Bishop Willard asks Dave in the Blind. Bob, I get the coffee reference. I didn't think things were that bad for Mitt Romney. However, there's one person I know you would not deal with, and that's my junior senator and Ava Braun Hitler's great nephew, Mike Braun. Signed, your buddy Dave in the Blind. Forgot about him. Easily enough done, I guess. It's not like he's setting the world on fire with his political or any other form of acumen. Suman says, subject line, Rittenhouse, I have a horrible feeling that the orange murderous asshole will pardon this murdering asshole. Well, fear no more, Suman. He is beyond the reach of the pardon power of Donald J. Trump. And the J stands for Pardoner-in-Chief. Because Donald J. Trump has no power as President of the United States to pardon anyone for state crimes. So there's that. Wait a minute, says Ron in Raleigh. I'm a black man in the South. I guess you realize I've worked with racists. I didn't make fast friends with them and brag about it. No, I understand all of that. I get that completely. I'm sorry if I conveyed anything similar to that. Billable Rick, Joe Biden. Joe Biden is the youngest senator ever elected. He was 29 on election day and 30 when he was seated. I believe that a person must be at least 30 years old to be a senator. Yeah, he was sworn in by the hospital bed cribs wherein his little boys lay after their mama and their sister were killed in a car accident. Just a fact. David in South Carolina, Stan, reminds us, yeah, Joe Biden gave Strom Thurmond's eulogy in 2003. I have no doubt of it. And that is a function of the collegiality for which the Senate brags upon itself. The New York Times reporting this evening, 8 minutes ago, that in fact Nitwit Nero will appoint Judge Amy Coney Barrett, handmaiden, to fill the seat vacated by the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. That is, to say the very least, nauseating. God almighty. Well, we will have plenty of time in which to dissect just how awful she is. We've already begun that. Remember, she has admitted that she will use her seat on the court. She admitted this in a commencement address at Notre Dame to the law school there. She will use her seat on the court to advance the construction of the kingdom of God. Yeah, really. I wish I was kidding. I am not. So America will take one step nearer to outright, unmitigated theocracy. And we can certainly talk about that when we get around to the front porch conversation. And I'm setting up to join that now. And I've got another story that, this from Steve in New York. It occurs to me that young Herr Rittenhouse traveled across state lines possessing a gun at the age of 17. He shot 3 people while killing 2. He committed all crimes while within the jurisdiction of Wisconsin. Then he fled across the state back to Illinois. So there are federal, Illinois, and Wisconsin implications here. Why is extradition necessary or even a question? Why is his mother not under possible indictment too? Well, it could be maybe that the grand jury hasn't met. They have to investigate, you know. That's one possibility. There are possible, and maybe this is part of the extradition strategy of the pettifogger representing him. Mr. Rittenhouse needs to address charges, or potential charges, here in Illinois before we ship him to Wisconsin. In the name of, wait for it, judicial economy. Yeah. And there probably are some federal crimes involved, although those would need to be pursued by a member of the Department of Justice, and I'm sure that that would not go over at all well with Bill Barr to prosecution, otherwise known as Attorney General Pepe the Frog. So we've got that going on. But like I said, I do have another story sitting around. The governor of Florida, white supremacist adjacent, illegitimate governor Ron Monkey Up DeSantis, who was only elected governor over Andrew Gillum by the narrowest of margins, and thanks to the efforts of real live, no kidding Nazis. Well, he has ordered the attorney general to open an investigation into Michael Bloomberg. Because, again, Michael Bloomberg has put forward some of his own money and raised a bunch more to answer the conundrum created, the problem created, when the state of Florida argued that that convicted felons in the state of Florida who had heretofore not had their right to vote would have their right to vote restored. But then the state of Florida, being a bunch of godless, soulless, motherless fucking maggots, declared that no, that the felons who'd had their right to vote restored really hadn't had, wouldn't have their rights to vote restored until such time as they had paid off any and all fines. And there are thousands of such people in Florida. Tens of thousands. So Michael Bloomberg, say what you will of him, most of it is probably true. Michael Bloomberg, who has the power to gather together and bundle up massive, horse-gagging wads of money, pulled together enough money to pay off all the fines of all of those felons so that their right to vote could be fully functional come November 3rd. Naturally, this did not sit well with the maggots, and I would not be at all surprised to find out that a phone call was made from Washington, D.C., the White House somewhere, to the governor's office of Florida, and that that information was then conveyed to the Attorney General of Florida, who is now opening an investigation of Michael Bloomberg for vote buying, which is a felony, you know. Mm-hmm. That's right, the Attorney General of Florida is investigating Michael Bloomberg for vote buying for paying off felons' fines. On the other hand, no one is investigating Donald Trump for vote buying for saying that he will unilaterally waste a few billions of taxpayer dollars sending out $200 gift cards to Medicare recipients for prescription drugs. Now, one of these seems like a far more obvious attempt at vote buying than the other does. Because, you see, Michael Bloomberg isn't telling the felons whose fines he's paying, he's not telling them how to vote or who to vote for. On the other hand, when he announced it, Nitwit Nero said he was sending out those $200 gift cards.
Because I, Donald Trump, will always take care of our seniors, and I'll never forget them.
That never forgetting part is going to prove to be a difficult promise to keep when his dementia gets even worse and he can't even remember what Melanoma Melanie's name is, or even little borons. One of these seems much more a matter of vote buying than the other. So thanks very kindly, Jeremy, and thanks very kindly, Mike in Cascadia. We got 15, and thanks to Ralphs, we got $15 to go on Giraffe and Joey's Lies, 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 Yeah challenge. And frankly, it's badly needed right now because I talked with Larry in Liberalville, and he used the U.S. Postal Service, so that won't become useful for another day or so. So, you know, whenever it arrives and I can do it, get it deposited. But thanks. And again, $15 to go. Thank you. Meanwhile, let's run over and check in with Sparky in the old holler tree we sublet from the Keebler Elves and sitting there holding forth around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob. Does Donald Trump have somebody that prints gift cards?
Personally, I'm guessing no.
Well, you know that's a $6 billion contract.
Right.
I mean, it's $6 billion put on those cards. It's So there's got to be a contract to print it up. That's 33 million gift cards. That's a lot of gift cards.
Oh, well, yes, it is. And if they are actually individual gift cards and they're not going on to somebody's, they're not just going on to a pre-existing account, yeah, that's a bit of a logistical challenge, isn't it, Sparky? I hadn't thought about that. Good call.
Well, yeah, you know the gift card racks in the stores where you can buy a gift card for Amazon?
Yeah.
It'd be one of those kind of deals. I mean, somebody makes those things.
Right. And
33 million of them before the election? That's a tall order there.
Well, it is, and there's also cost involved, and the question of where he's going to get the money to do it with.
Yeah, well, that's over $6 billion.
Yeah, so what, is he going to take it out from, like he did with the wall, take it from military funds for, I don't know, building schools?
Didn't he just lose a case on that last day?
I think he did, yeah. But that's evidence, Sparky, of the degree of lawlessness to which we have sunk. Apparently, he just does things.
And then there's all these seniors that get prescriptions by mail.
Yeah, they're getting.
How are you going to redeem that gift card to a mail-in prescription service? Send them the card?
I don't know. How do they pay their copay?
Usually it's taken out of a credit card or debit card or something if you pay it.
So could they use the gift card that way? And if it's not set up to receive a gift card, how much is that going to cost? Oh, this is good. This is good, Sparky.
Yeah, because all the gift cards would have to be numbered.
Sure.
Maybe they'll do it with your Medicaid account number. They gave us a different number a couple of years ago instead of your Social Security number. I don't have mine with me here. Look at it. It's a series of numbers and letters, and I don't know. But that, I just thought of that. I read that story last night. I said, "For real?" Because I couldn't listen to his deal yesterday.
Oh no, who could?
Once he started, it was the same old spiel that they always give about. Oh, you'd be able to choose your doctor, and you'd be able to. Do this and that.
Oh, and yeah,
it'll be so much better.
And you, everybody will get Frisbees and wheat checks, and right.
My question with his card was that since I've got VA, Medicare will not pick up my copay for the VA. So I'm paying Medicare for absolutely nothing. But if he sends out that $200 for medical prescriptions, I'm wondering if I would be able to use it to pay my copay with the VA.
There's another thing.
No, this is the act in haste, repent in leisure presidency. And Steve in New York points out, and the gift cards are probably made in, wait for it, China. Oh, and okay. So here's further information on this, and this is kind of some inside baseball. Matt in San Francisco tells us those gift card companies take a percentage every time you use one of those gift cards. It's a win-win. He buys votes, his corporate friends get a cut, and seniors can buy a refill of their meds. I'm fighting the urge to strip naked and run up Lombard Street screaming. Well, if you're going to run up a street, Lombard's as good as any. Good God, that's that really steep one, right? If I recall it's my San Francisco.
Twisty, curvy one.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe
I think it's a one-way street to traffic.
But maybe
you can
Matt
only
means,
come down. You can't go up.
Yeah, maybe Matt means walk briskly.
One-way street downhill.
Yeah, maybe Matt means walk briskly. Lee in New York says $200 gift cards. Oh, please, I can see how this works.
You'll be getting your great Big Lee gift card soon. Vote for me. The card's in the mail. Please allow 6 to 8 weeks for delivery. Vote for me now. The check, I mean gift card, is in the mail.
Sure, says Lee in New York. Ron and Raleigh had written regarding the gift cards earlier, and I saw it yesterday evening. He says, gift cards, one of my prescriptions is $660. As far as I'm concerned, says Ron, he can turn that fucking gift card sideways and stick it straight up his monkey ass, if you smell what I'm cooking. I do. Can't say I'm happy about it, but I do smell it. Yes. I mean, right. The word smell and Trump's monkey ass should never, ever, ever, ever appear in the same sentence at any time, anywhere in the known universe. But now there's a complicated theoretical physics problem for you. What if there's a parallel universe? Work with me here. Where Donald Trump is a decent human being.
Whoa.
No, I don't think that. I think that would break physics. What there probably is there's an alternate universe where Donald Trump's granddaddy actually gets to stay in Germany, and then the person who would have been Donald Trump, I don't know, gets run over by an American tank at the Battle of the Bulge. Maybe just by mentioning it, we just created that alternate universe. Theoretical physics is my favorite kind of physics because it requires absolutely no fucking mathematics at all. Just pondering. So, who all do we have in our merry band this evening so far?
You want me to give you names?
No, I just called them up here. Let's check in. Let's check in. Okay, I'm going to check in with Steve from Georgia Stan first because Steve has been as quiet as a graven image for the last 2 weeks on Friday, and I'm not going to have that anymore.
Bob, what's going on, man?
Steve!
I was just reading the article in the New York Times about how none of the pharmaceutical companies want to pick up any of these plastic Trump cards because they say the name Trump, and they don't want the bad PR, so that may be shot in the ass. And they were also on the verge of maybe coming to a deal to lower prescription drug prices, and it blew all that up, too. This guy could fuck up a cup of coffee, man.
No, wait. This guy could fuck up the 8-year-old piece of bubble gum that comes out when you're going to have a colonoscopy.
Yeah, there's that. But yeah, I just posted it in the chat if anybody wants to read it. I mean, my goodness, my gosh.
Steve, you got to know Trump's never made coffee in his life.
That's true. He probably couldn't boil water. Jesus, man. And it's been a discouraging week because everybody, we see this train wreck coming, and I haven't heard any solutions. Are there any?
Not that I'm aware of. Oh, and by the way.
The train wreck's not coming. It's just happening in slow motion.
Right.
Yeah, we're in it. When I mentioned via Ron and Raleigh's note, Trump's monkey ass and smell, I got an immediate note from Suman. And late afternoon tea and snacks are ruined in Arizona time. I'm just glad to know that there's a member of the Horn Family Community Congregation who has late afternoon tea and snacks. It's just so damn civilized.
Hey, crumpets?
You got to ask Suman. Suman, any crumpets? I know this much. Agnes fixed me this afternoon by way of my afternoon meal. because I'm trying to cut down on my meat consumption and everything. One of those little open it, microwave it, eat it, because I love all the various Indian dishes, curries and whatnot. Today I had vegetarian vindaloo of the spicy variety, and I got to say, they weren't kidding. It was spicy. And the little beads of sweat over along my hairline. It was absolutely delightful. So, it was an over rice. It was real tasty. Just trying not to eat so doggone much meat. So that maybe the quitting smoking won't pack on the pounds quite so profoundly. By the way, Dave number 11 with TV ratings from last night. Lakers versus Nuggets, 4.6 million people. Tucker Carlson, 4.7 million people. Hannity, 4.5 million people. Dave observing, this is terrifying. Here's the thing, though. I'll bet Carlson and Hannity, neither one, had bigger ratings than whatever was running on Nickelodeon. Or the Cartoon Network. Maybe. Because I remember hearing a lot of years ago that no matter how high Bill O'Reilly's ratings were, he routinely got his ass kicked by SpongeBob every night of the fucking week. So we have that. Steve, jumping in alongside you, Rusty says, this guy could fuck up a soup sandwich. That works. Yeah.
Or mayonnaise sandwich. Jesus.
Oh, and this Darlene, speaking of spice. Woo! The spice in the Kraken black spice rum that I'm having a sip of just hit the back of my throat, and I am suffering big time. Coughing, hacking, and getting my sinuses cleaned out. So that's the whole point of it. So it's Darlene from Connecticut on the north deck, joining the Friday on the Front Porch crew. And can I give an update on Buddy the Beefalo?
Oh yes, we want to hear about Buddy.
So Buddy the Beefalo, and one of your listeners posted on my Facebook page that he was quite grateful that I brought Buddy the Beefalo to his attention. So Buddy's doing okay. He is still on the lam. And,
wait, the beefalo is on the lam?
Official, he's still on the lam.
That sounds Buddy. Dirty.
and the it's an official police photo, but there is a official police photo of Buddy, so I'll try to see if I can post it in the chat. But he's still thriving and doing well. There is a police officer, a Plymouth police officer, who is quite dedicated to capturing him safely. He's still putting out the water and the grain, and Buddy's coming and eating that water and grain near a trailer, which my guess is I think Buddy could probably kick through the trailer, but they're trying to, I think, gradually move the food and the water towards the trailer and then eventually in the trailer to the point where they can, you know, capture him in the trailer. So... I'll keep you posted.
Does the trailer have a trap door?
I'm not sure, Sparky, what you mean by a trap door. It looks like a regular...
Be like a bear catcher or something.
It looks like there's a ramp leading into the trailer. I'm not confident that the trailer is going to hold him. It looks like a cow trailer or a horse trailer. But it looks like there's a ramp leading into it. And I think that the idea is to coax him in and then somehow shut that ramp up, like pull it up.
I just have this mental image now of Buddy the Beefalo eating the grain, moving ever closer to the trailer, looking at the ramp and eventually seeing them put where they put the grain inside the trailer and just giving a side eye to the internet camera that's there like, really? Really?
I think, yeah.
You expect me to fall for this?
Exactly. Well, he didn't fall for the processing, the meat processing plant.
And you know, there's a.
And he's very handsome, by the way. He's a very, very handsome fellow. So
are you familiar? I know others are. Folks like Steve from Georgistan, the Cartoon Network series. I don't even know if it's still on. But it was Robot Chicken.
Yeah, I love that, man. It was by Seth MacFarlane was in on that.
Yeah. Do you remember the one they did with the unicorn? Or rather, Pegasus? Not unicorn, but Pegasus. Pegasus.
Probably.
Pegasus finds himself caught in a leg trap. And a precious little blonde girl, you know, a little pink dress, comes skipping up, la-di-da-di-da. And Pegasus looks at her and says, little girl. Could you help me? I seem to be caught in this trap.
And she says, I'll help you.
And puts a feed bag on. And he says, oh, thank you. I was very hungry. Oh, no. I'm feeling sleepy. I think I've been drugged. And then collapses, and the rest of it continues from there. She turns Pegasus into her little pony and paints him pink and things like that. It's hilarious. But yeah, why not? I mean, has anybody there heard of, I don't know, tranquilizer darts? I mean, I remember those being used way back in when Marlon Perkins was sitting in safety, sending Jim out to do the dirty work.
Yeah.
Just blowgun his ass.
That's because Jim exactly. is covered by Mutual of Omaha, Bob.
Yes, it is, Steve.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I don't understand why the DEEP, the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, hasn't gotten involved with that. It seems like it's this one Plymouth police officer who has taken it upon himself to be the steward of this animal. Now, maybe, they're trying to get him into the trailer so they can actually weigh him. Because, you know, if you're not careful, I would assume if you're not careful about the dosage, you could kill the animal. So they may be trying to get him into the trailer and try to find a way to weigh him so they can get the proper dosage to tranquilize him, because I don't know how else they're going to safely transport him down to Critters Creek in Florida without tranquilizing him. So I'm wondering if that's part and parcel or part of, you know, the method to the madness.
I would think you could probably get a working estimate. The titration for things like tranquilizers on a critter that big, it probably has a relatively broad margin for error. I'd think you could probably weigh another similar beefalo and get a good idea, but then again. And by the way, Darlene, you have been awarded a cowbell.
Okay.
By Lee in New York for the beefalo is on the lamb.
I can't, thank you, Lee from New York. I cannot take credit for that because I actually read that somewhere heard it somewhere on the news where a news reporter said that Buddy the Beefalo is on the lamb. So
well, Lee in New York says,
wonder where that saying came from.
Well, it's not L-A-M-B, it's L-A-M.
It's L-A-M, yes, yeah. Correct.
But Lee in New York points out, that's a marriage made at the deli counter.
I would think under normal circumstances it would be, but seeing that Buddy has gotten quite a bit of press and that people with him, that I did just make up, I think he's got a good shot at having a nice long life in sanctuary down in Florida. So,
well, I hope they'll get him. I hope he'll have a beefalo companion to run the Florida range with.
Well, he's a handsome boy. So he certainly, I think he would be attracting the cows quite easily.
What has he got? What has he got? Product in his forelock? Has he got product in his forelock or something?
Well, you know, it's interesting because he's very intelligent, obviously, because he knew what he was headed for and he got away. So does man, and, you know, generic, really want to see him procreate, because he's just going to make smarter cows and beefaloes. So, you know, where they're going to figure out and try to escape when they're going to be ground up for burgers. So that's something that I've kind of contemplated, but we'll see. I'll keep you posted on.
I'm looking at him now. He's got an impressive set of horns, but he looks more bull than buffalo.
Let me see if I can. Here's a nighttime photo I'm trying to upload on. Not sure I know how to do this. Let me see if I can do this. Yeah. Okay. There he is in the chat. So I don't know if that's the pic you're seeing, Bob.
I'm seeing a picture of him eating the grain outside the trailer.
He looks smaller than an Angus bull, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking of him being like buffalo size with the big hump. And
is that a nighttime photo you're looking at, Bob? This is what I just posted.
Yeah, it's in grayscale. So let me look in the chat and see.
Yeah. So that's him, and
he is mighty horny for sure.
You're not getting a cowbell for that.
Okay.
I don't know if that's horny or if that's he's.
Wait,
just
it just occurred to me. We're giving cowbells over a story about a beef. So that itself gets a cowbell.
But he's a nice looking dude, and it looks like he's actually not eating from the tubs of food. He's actually grazing there, so there's plenty to, I think, divert him from actually walking into what looks to me like a fairly flimsy trailer. So I think it's going to take a while to catch him.
Well, and it gets even worse, because the story I'm looking at here, I didn't know what the name of the effort to capture Buddy was called. Oh, for heaven's sakes. It's called, wait for it, oh, who did that? It's called Operation Stakeout, STEAK.
That's news to me, but that's great. That's, the Plymouth residents have been they've been having fun with it. And Plymouth is not as rural as that those photos might lead you to believe. There's actually some very built up and well traveled roads through Plymouth. So it looks like, I'm thinking in part, the police officer is trying to encourage him to stay off the road, the main drags there that are heavily traveled, some of which I traveled at least once a week for a couple of years, so I know them pretty well. So the fact that he seems to be in a more ruralized section of Plymouth is good. So I'm thinking that might be in part what the police officer is trying to do, is to keep him coming to those that pasture area, and stay in the rural areas so that he doesn't wind up getting killed on some of the roads, the well-traveled routes through Plymouth. So I am optimistic that they're going to get this bad boy, and that he will live out a happy life down in Florida.
We have an etymological suggestion coming from Ron and Raleigh. I'm thinking that would be a beefalo bell. Oh God. Oh, it doesn't. Oh, and thank you, Steve from Georgia Stan, for looking up on the lamb. Speculation exists that it comes from the Scandinavian lamb, L-A-M, 1525, his wife sore lambing him, meaning to beat, pound, or strike. Mark Twain, whom we were talking about last night, lambing the lady in 1855 and lamb like all creation in 1865, meaning beating. And so to avoid a lambing, one takes it on the lamb. And Alan Pinkerton, according to the late, great William Safire, who, although a conservative, was fun with language, says that Alan Pinkerton said that a pickpocket would, after he secures the wallet, he will utter the word lamb, meaning to let the man go and get out of the way as soon as possible.
That's great. Yeah, that's cool. The etymological background of that.
Very complex.
So to switch gears very quickly, so the first woman, and not only that, the first Jewish woman to lie in state happened today. Kudos to her family for allowing us to have her for 3 days, lying in repose and then lying in state. At the nation's capital, lying in repose at the United States Supreme Court. She was, it was funny because, well, funny, quote unquote, when they brought her out of the U.S., the nation's capital, and back into the hearse, they had a line of individuals on the steps, and they all, including led by Chuck Schumer, were waving goodbye to her. they're now going to have a private ceremony, I guess, and lay Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg to rest a week after you announced, Bob, on this very Friday on the front porch that she had died. And this is tough because we have to let her go, and already we're being bombarded with the Republicans led by Trump picking a subpar replacement, and I am so frustrated because I think
subpar. She's right out of a Margaret Atwood novel, man.
Yeah,
this lady is fucking crazy.
Exactly, and you're right, Steve, and it's like I always feel like there's nothing. It seems like there should be something we can do. And it seems like there's never anything we can do. The deck is stacked. The board, the playing board, the board is rigged. The game is rigged. And I don't trust Democrats if they should gain power in all three, both houses and the presidency come 2021. I don't even trust them to exact the necessary revenge, or shall I say corrections, to this travesty.
Repairs. Darlene, it would be repairing the judiciary. There needs to be a Judiciary Repair Act, and everything needs to get fixed. All, the courts, the appellate, and the Supreme Court.
Well, I just don't trust that it's going to happen unless there is enormous pressure.
Yes, we have to push them, just like FDR with the New Deal. We have to push them. Make me do it, right?
Right.
We have to make them do it.
There's just no rest for the weary. That if we're fortunate to squeak out of this in one piece and maintain, prevent Trump from creating a dictatorship and a fascist country, we can't sit on our laurels. We're going to have to. It's like the work has just begun. So it's not over for us, and I'm already exhausted. So it's going to take a lot to.
We ain't seen nothing yet. What does Bob say, Darlene? He says every day is going to be weirder than the next until we finally get to that election, and it's still going to get weird.
And there's no
mutual first debate next week.
There's no procedural maneuvering to keep this from happening whatsoever. Is there? I mean, has anybody really thought this through?
I heard Steve, I heard that, you know, the idea of doing another impeachment and putting the Senate back into impeachment mode where no other business can take place, I think I heard that was debunked. That's not true. That they can proceed with, you know, the Supreme Court shoving in the...
I know a good friend was throwing it out there last week, and he even had some literature to back it up. So, but it must they must have changed the rules or something since then.
Those were the rules in 1986 that I posted. Okay. And I stated I didn't know if they were still in effect.
Right, you did, in all fairness. But, you know, I don't know, man. Is there any kind of procedural maneuvering? Like, make them do a voice count and make all 53 of their asses show up in person.
Yeah, I did hear something about that, Steve, that they all, no one, the thing is, you can make them keep a quorum,
yep.
And so that none of the other senators that are supposed to leave to go out and campaign, they won't be able to.
Exactly, and just leave one person there to do that pro forma thing that they do, you know, when they don't want anything passed, leave one person there and let them rotate it, keep one Democrat there to keep it open. I mean, there's got to be a way to think your way out of this fucking thing, man. Yeah. We don't want to let it get to this point.
Apparently,
is there nothing we can do?
Well, no, we're talking
apparently about there is one scheme that has been set forth, and I believe it was Chuck Schumer that was talking about it, and that is, and I don't know all the details of it, but if they start doing amendments to bills or something of that sort, a bill that's already, quote, on the floor kind of thing, they can demand roll call votes on each and every little thing that comes up. So by adding amendments and then there's a discussion period and then there's a roll call on whether to accept the amendment or not accept the amendment, and then there's a roll call on the tabling, and it would be a sort of an endless loop of procedural items on existing legislation, or it might have something to do with the continuing resolution as opposed to the new budget, because they don't have a budget. They're working on a continuing resolution, and there are amendments to the continuing resolution that can stall the work, but it probably will not be able to stall it to November 3rd.
Well, there is, 400 bills that Nancy's got signed that are sitting on McConnell Grim Reaper's desk, right?
Yeah, they're decaying, yep.
Can you make an amendment, like Roger just said, to each one of those, and then somebody has to, read the whole thing? And then do a name roll call for each of the 400.
I like the way you think, man.
Hey. Schumer was talking about something of that sort, but I don't remember all the details.
This aren't the green eggs and ham like Ted Cruz did, right? Over and over and over again. Just read the green eggs and ham.
They did away with the filibuster.
Yeah, that's
Chris.
That won't work.
I keep reading that the Congress is supposed to go on some sort of a break for a week or two. Is that true? And if so, how are they going to ram through a nomination if they're going to be on vacation? Because that's what I've been hearing in terms of, another stimulus package. Shame on them. And how are they going to ram a Supreme Court nomination through if they're leaving Washington? What am I missing?
The last 2 weeks of October, they are supposed to be campaigning. You're right, Darlene. They're supposed to be gone.
I don't see, and there has to be something we can do. There has to be something that Democrats can do to stop this, to thwart this.
Darlene, can't Pelosi impeach Barr? Can't they do those impeachments to stop it?
Well, but that's happening. That happens in the House. Okay. That happens in the House, and it has no impact
on the Senate until such time as the bill of impeachment actually reaches the Senate.
Well, you know, that's, hey, look, Nancy was talking, she was, you know, making some pretty tough talk earlier this week that they had, you know, arrows in the quiver. Again, I think she was scrambling, but
she's quivering all right.
I'm skeptical, but maybe she does have something up her quiver.
Oh, be careful there, darling.
I'm hoping against hope we can stop this.
Yeah, this Amy Coney Barrett is a complete nightmare. She is the worst nightmare for Supreme Court. She makes Harriet Myers look like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, really.
And she's young, and the only thing I can hope is that Kamala, and my apologies for mispronouncing her name repeatedly second to last time I called into the show, Kamala Harris, they're saying she may be called back to the Senate for those Senate hearings in the last 2 weeks of the campaign, which is just ideal. I mean, the Republicans would just love that. But I'm hoping that maybe Harris will turn around and say, you know, I will do everything in my power to ensure that your time on the bench is limited and that you are impeached. That's the only thing I can think of, because if anyone's going to call her out on her bullshit, like what Bob said earlier in the program about her Barrett's statement in front of whatever school it was, university.
Notre Dame.
You know, that she made it very clear, you know, that she was going to push towards a theocracy and put religion first. That you know, Kamala's going to call her out on it and reveal her for the fraud that she is and say, you know, you are illegitimate. That's it. And that she will be able to galvanize the House and the Senate, hopefully a Democratic controlled Senate, into impeaching her ass and getting it out of there. That's the only thing I can think of. It's after the fact.
She has also been, a statement has been attributed to her that her branch of Catholicism, that she is of the opinion that the man of the house is the master and the woman should do what the man demands.
Precisely. That organization is called People of Praise, and it's a cult. Margaret Atwood even went so far as to say it inspired her. People of Praise was their positions moved her when she was writing the Handmaid's Tale.
All right, but in that vein, if she is appointed to the Supreme Court and there are hearings and she goes home and her husband tells her to vote yea or nay, doesn't matter, and then she goes to the court and does that, her husband then is in control of a Supreme Court judge. Now, he is not being interviewed as to his ideas. And therefore, how can she claim to be an impartial jurist when she feels that her husband has the authority to tell her what to do?
Hey, you know what, Roger? Maybe her husband will forbid her from sitting on the court.
No, he will put her on the court because he's undoubtedly Catholic as well, to make sure all those little beautiful little virgin girlies cannot get birth control because they need to not fuck, and or if they do, they have to get pregnant to make more little babies for Jesus.
Well, Roger, the, in the same world, that would be a disqualifier out of the gate, but it's the times we're living in now. It's
I think it should disqualify her, too.
Or the Pope at Rome, as the case may be.
Yeah.
And as far as who the babies are being made for.
I just think the Democrats are just going to have to nonstop say that whoever Trump appoints is illegitimate. This individual is illegitimate and will be impeached.
Just like Gorsuch.
They have to. There's just no question they have to do this. And like what Roger was saying, he's right. You know, if the woman is subservient to the man, well, why is she even in the running for a Supreme Court justice? It is cynical. It is a contradiction. It makes absolutely no sense. And the person I think to do that would be Kamala Harris. Because she could very well be our vice president in 2021, let's hope, and eventually become president. So I feel like if we can't stop these bogus hearings and nomination from going through, then the Democrats have to be unified and in unison in saying, this appointment is not legitimate. It is impeachable, and it's not legitimate in order to lay the groundwork. Just like Trump is laying the groundwork for contesting the election.
For stealing it, yeah. He's laying
for
the groundwork.
For stealing it. They need to fucking play the same game. They've got to play the same game. And the Democrats at least have more of a legitimate basis from which to make those claims. Please, Bob, tell me there's some other option. I'm not seeing, like you said.
Well, we need
the Senate. We can't do shit.
Darlene, what? Some of this, all of this is going to take place in the Senate, but that does not mean that the Senate is the only place where action can be directed, as we have seen in the $10 million in advertising that was spent on advancing the nomination of. Brat, okay? We need the Lincoln Project or Michael Bloomberg or People for the American Way. We need
Midas Touch.
We need a $20 million PR blitz. Lots of TV ads, radio ads, everything. Call your senator, tell them hell no on, this religious maniac. Okay,
but
just hold on for a minute, please. That $10 million campaign will be out there by the Judicial Action Network, I think it was, a bunch of repulsive assholes. So that's got to be countered too. Let me, at this point in time, it's all a PR war. I mean, it just is. Now, James in Illinois just wrote in and said, everything's on the table. They get their ninth justice and the new Congress ends the filibuster, the new Senate. Then they appoint justices 10 through 15, period. That really looks to me like what the only hope is to take control of the Senate, hold control of the House, get the presidency, and then neuter this gang of maniacs. And let me just add in a couple of things for consideration. One, she's 48 years old. And, of course, the goal of any time you're appointing a right-wing justice, the goal now, I mean, eventually they will nominate, some Republican president will nominate a 22-and-a-half-year-old first-year law student. Or maybe, some little Jacob Wohl of the future. Again, you got to remember, you are not required to be a lawyer to be on the Supreme Court. And if the Senate is compliant, whoever's nominated will go up. I mean, I'm speaking a little broadly, but they want young ones on there so that they can fuck America. I mean, it's reasonable to expect that Amy Coney Barrett will fuck America for 40 years. Okay? And that's why they've been appointing all of these youngsters. But I think, and this is ageist, I suppose, but I got to ask the question, at 48, do you really have the requisite knowledge and wisdom to decide such weighty matters? And I'll take this just a little bit further. Her background at Notre Dame is that she has been a professor. She teaches civil procedure, constitutional law, and statutory interpretation in the name of Jesus. I added the "in the name of Jesus" part, but I think it's probably there anyway. She was put on the court in 2017, directly onto the Court of Appeals, never having served on the district court, never having judged so much as a fucking traffic ticket trial. Okay, she has no trial experience. I don't see anything here that says, private practice. She was a law clerk for Judge Lawrence Silberman on the D.C. Circuit. Then she was a law clerk for Fat Dead Tony Scalia. And then she practiced law at Miller, Cassidy, LaRocca, and Lewin in Washington, D.C. I don't see anything talking about her trial practice. She's an ivory tower lawyer who knows about how the law works in theory, but probably has precious little experience actually dealing with real live breathing human beings. It gets worse though. Okay. This is one of those apple falleth not far from the tree kind of situations. She was born in New Orleans. She has five sisters and a brother. A family of seven kids. Her daddy was a lawyer for Shell Oil. That should tell you something. That's probably, if your daddy's a lawyer for Shell Oil, you have been inculcated from the moment you can understand the spoken word to be a corporatist, most likely. Her mother was a homemaker. And that's not to cast any aspersions toward women who stay in the home, because that's probably a hell of a lot harder job than when you got seven kids or one. That's a harder job than anything out in the private sector is. The philosophy in which she is steeped is one of, as Roger noted, subservience to masculine dominance. She is in service to the patriarchy. So that means any woman who comes forward with a claim about unequal pay, sex discrimination, sexual harassment, sexual abuse, is automatically going to be presumptively in the wrong with Amy Coney Barrett, because if only that woman would have shut the fuck up, maybe her husband wouldn't have beaten the hell out of her. This goes back to what everybody was saying about that philosophy of subservience to the husband should, and frankly, her devotion to her to that Roman Catholic cult should be a disqualifier.
I'm
sorry to go on at such length, but I wanted to get those things out there, Darlene.
Can I just say I think we got to tread carefully here, because I thought I saw an article. I probably got the number wrong, of the 114 men that have been appointed to the Supreme Court. I think we need to be careful about that, saying, she has no experience in the trenches, although I agree generally and theoretically, like Sonia Sotomayor was a trial court judge. I think that is the ideal basis from which to appoint. But even someone such as Ruth Bader Ginsburg struggled to get a job in a law firm and really had to claw and scrape her way up to where she was, where she to eventually what she achieved.
I think we need to be really, really careful about hammering her on that point, that she's a law school professor, because quite frankly, I would love to see Anita Hill get appointed to the Supreme Court. I think that would be in your face to Clarence Thomas, among other things, that I think she would be quite viable and capable of rendering decisions on the Supreme Court. So I think we need to be careful of that, of taking that angle. But I think the angle that you had suggested the other night about the fact that we're talking about a president who has been impeached, and you know, seeing that Mitch McConnell is so fucking great at making up rules as he goes along, maybe the Democrats need to do that as well. And the House needs to say any president that's been impeached should not have the ability to appoint a Supreme Court justice. Now, I don't know if that could backfire in terms of Clinton, because he appointed Ruth Bader Ginsburg, but I'm not exactly sure of the timing on that. If he appointed her during the time that Kenneth Starr was investigating him, or if it was before or after that. But it was 1993, so I'm not sure of the timeline. But
she was appointed in 93.
Yes.
That's well pre-impeachment. That's even...
Very good. So I'm wondering if that's the angle, because what the fuck does impeachment matter if the Senate is, which is corrupt, as, what's his name said, is clearly corrupt, the House of Representatives, the chair of the Judiciary, Nadler had said, he came out and said, it's very clear that the Senate is corrupt. And he, of course, is referencing the Republicans in the Senate. You know, is there a way for the House to say if a president has been impeached, they should not be in any position to appoint a Supreme Court justice?
There well, it gets a little bit deeper.
It has to be a consequences to that.
No, it gets a little bit deeper. Mitt Romney agreed with the House of Representatives that Trump should not remain president, that he wasn't competent to remain president. And Mitt Romney has already stated that he is going to vote for the nominee. So how can a man who does not think Trump is fit to be president, in agreement with him making a Supreme Court appointment and hinting that he will vote for whoever is appointed?
Brilliant. That's brilliant, Roger, because that's brilliant, because you know, this is just like a logical train of thought from what Bob had suggested about, you know, the suitability of Trump is just not there, but the fact that he is an impeached president, the suitability to appoint a Supreme Court justice, I think it lends credence. My sense is that Romney really was impacted and couldn't handle the backlash from his impeachment vote in the Senate. And
yeah,
this is
point,
his
Charlie.
Way. That's
I,
his way.
I'd like to know.
It's political.
Like to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's his mea
I'd
culpa.
Like I would like to know why Bishop Willard wants basically an entirely Catholic court. As a Mormon, I don't quite get that. Can anyone help me that?
That's a good point.
Right?
Again, that's a great point, Chris. And again, it could harken back to the fact that he was seriously freaked out by the backlash from his vote in the Senate to impeach Trump.
Well, now we also need to remember that Bishop Romney, Bishop Romney here, when he was being indoctrinated in the LDS Church, at the time he was a growing up young lad and learning the tenets of the religion, one of those tenets was that black people could not be full male members of the church.
Correct.
They could belong to the church, but they could not hold the pastoral powers of the white brethren of the Mormon church.
Yeah.
But well, he was you know, raised as a racist.
Well, you know, for all the wine the Catholics drink, I can't believe the non-binary Romney would be interested in more Catholics. Very strange.
Yeah. You don't have any idea how much Mormons drink.
Well, Romney doesn't. Romney's an avowed non-drinker.
You know, I heard a great
absolutely totally in agreement that the tenets of the religion say that there is no alcohol consumption and no nicotine consumption, and theoretically they won't even drink Coca-Cola because it has caffeine in it.
No. Wait. Hold up, Roger. There's a caveat to that. The whole no caffeine thing, and it's a term of art from the 19th century, the early to mid 19th century. The Mormon proscription is on hot drinks.
Hmm.
Okay.
Well, Bob, this, she and put so, drinking on the
and
caffeine.
So and so I've got a Mormon friend who will pound down an ice cold Dr. Pepper, caffeine and all, ice cold Coca-Cola, because it is not hot.
Hmm.
Okay. Secondly, in regard to Mormons drinking, another Mormon, once told me the following joke. When you go fishing, when Mormons go fishing, how do they make sure that nobody drinks? Because everybody has a beer while they're fishing. Well, the answer is invite two Mormons. And it's a joke. Because a Mormon by himself will pound down a few while he's got a line in the water. That was the implication of the jest.
Well, Bishop Bob, you quit caffeine now and you're not drinking and smoked anymore. I think you're a Mormon, damn it.
No, because I'm not under the impression that when I die I'm going to get my own private planet with a shit ton of sister wives. God knows what happens after they dead baptize me or whatever, but, you know, hopefully there's somebody out there that'll try to prevent that from happening, but, you know.
Shit, Joey, now we have to buy Bob and Agnes a dressage horse. Thanks, Joey.
Off! Yeah, I hear Rafalka may be on the market. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how we'd transport him because I don't have a station wagon big enough to strap him to the top of.
Bow wow.
So shit all over the car.
Have you already?
What was the dog's name?
Seamus. Yeah. Have you ever heard an Irish setter scream? Jesus, those people. Oh God! But the bottom line is that was his mea culpa. This is his mea culpa for having dared to speak out against Trump. But he does deserve to be hammered for it. And I don't know, you know, the rules of the Senate. I don't know how any member of this august body, having voted to convict Donald Trump and admitted that he was in fact guilty of the charges, I don't know how that person could ever allow Donald Trump to appoint another Supreme Court justice when he stands an impeached president. That's how that works.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Kyle in Kentucky stand with a note says, and there's some gimmick infringement here, you're going to be hearing from Ron's lawyers, Kyle. Bob, stop assuming that wisdom matters to the Republicans. All they care is that Amy Coney Barrett's going to go against the gays, the women, those uppity blacks, and the illegals taking everyone's jobs. And, of course, he's entirely correct, Kyle is. So.
Yep.
Now, how can all those illegals take the jobs when they're too goddamn lazy and all they want to do is suck off welfare?
Yeah, doesn't that just beat all?
Great point, Roger. Hey, I got a question, guys. Go ahead, darling.
I just, again, maybe I'm just looking for some
something to hang on to here, but is there anything that the Democrats
No, it's going to get darker when I start talking about the 12th Amendment bullshit again.
Is there anything we can do? Is there anything that the House
and
the Senate
Democrats and Senate can do?
This is serious.
So, Bob, have you heard, I'm sure you've heard about the 12th Amendment stuff, and then, you know, it can, some of the states, if they can't decide who won the election, right, they can send, the Republican states can send an alternate set of electors, right? Those states that have a Republican House but a Democratic governor, I've heard the Democratic governor can send another set of electors to go to the Capitol, right? And so then who's the imposters? Who's the imposter electors? And my question is, can Nancy call in the Capitol Police to arrest the imposter electors and put them in a tent, you know, like one of the ones we have down at the border for the for our refugees, right? And just have a tent holding these imposter electors. What do you think? Any of that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I understand what you're saying, but she has jurisdiction over what happens in the House.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. At the Capitol, right?
No, not at the Capitol, in the House.
Oh, in the House. In the House. And those electors are supposed to report to the House, correct?
Right.
Okay. So when those imposters show up, she says, you guys are not supposed to be here. You aren't the right folks. And so you're trespassing and we're going to hold you.
And then it goes and then we get back to that Marbury versus Madison situation, namely a writ of mandamus in which she gets sued and the original jurisdiction of the Supreme Court is invoked. It goes straight to the 6-3 and they go, nope, here's your writ. Seat him.
Well, and then she can say the same thing that Andrew Jackson did. So you have rendered your decision. Now try to enforce it. How's that?
It's slightly different because Jackson was head of the executive department and therefore commander in chief of the military.
Yeah, she's got no. All she has is the Capitol Police, and she could deputize folks like us. And if I drive from Portland to Washington D.C. and say, "Hey, could you give me a shiny little Capitol Police star?" You know, me and my dog will stand watch too. And then there's like a million of us, and then there's 10 million of us, and we all just hang out at the Capitol. And we say, fuck your imposter electors and get the hell out of here.
Well, but are you, Chris, overlooking the fact that there will be 10 million maggots there, too?
Well, now you know where I'm headed. Yes.
And
so it starts.
Well, that's interesting you bring that whole scenario up because last night on CNN... Thomas Friedman, who is not known for, well, you know, he's a right-winger, but he's a never-Trumper now, so he gets extra double-plus good bonus credibility. He said that, he told Anderson Cooper last night, I think what happened in the last few days is a six-alarm fire. The President of the United States has told us either I win the election or I delegitimize the election. Those are your choices, folks, according to Friedman. And continued saying, when you have a president without shame, backed by a party without spine, amplified by a network without integrity, and by social networks that are marinated in conspiracy theories, behind whom are a lot of armed people, if you're not frightened by this, you're not paying attention. And went further and said that the GOP is a political brothel that rents itself out by the night to whoever will energize its base. And so the upshot of all of this is Friedman said that for all intents and purposes, we are on the brink of a potential second civil war. And Anderson Cooper asked him, okay, what do we do? And I hate that it keeps coming down to this, but Friedman said the same thing I've said. There's only one thing to do. Vote. Go out and vote. Vote for Joe Biden. That's the only tool we have. It's a tool that can work. That is to overwhelmingly vote. I've written and I will repeat. I will walk to the polls. I will crawl to the polls. I will slither to the polls, bike to the polls, hike to the polls. But I will cast my vote for Joe Biden.
Mike says,
I'd like to throw another little wrench in this whole thing. I did a little search today on the various states' requirements regarding the certification of the vote. And the most stringent that I found was that each and every precinct shall report their totals to their local voting jurisdiction, the county clerk kind of thing, by midnight of the day the polls close. And then things get a little stranger, because basically it goes from 10 to 20 days after the polls close before the county clerks certify their vote totals. Now, some of that has to do with just the local school board member, and some of them have to do with the legislative seats, and then there are your statewide offices, and then there's your presidential offices. And the presidential elector certifications, just in reading through the various states, go anywhere from 10 to 25 days after the polls have closed before the certification of the vote is required to be at the state level. And it's only after those elections are certified by the local jurisdiction that any decisions can be made by the states as to who the electors are. So any move Trump makes to try and screw with the vote totals on the night of the election are prima facie bullshit, because the counties have this time before the vote totals are certified. And I could not find any clause in any of the states that I went through that said anything about how and when the absentee ballots, and all mail-in ballots are absentee ballots, on how soon, other than the certification process, they need to be counted. So,
Roger, I think I can address some of that. Absentee ballots, and I'm speaking from a West Virginia perspective, of course. Absentee ballots traditionally are counted at the canvas, and the canvas is an important concept. The canvas is where the actual final tally is established and certified. That's where they go back over everything. And for instance, as I mentioned last night, if your in-person vote total is such that the absentee ballots cannot mathematically affect the outcome, don't even bother with them. It's just how it is.
But Bob, no,
wait.
There's a little bit of a problem there.
What?
They may not affect the presidential, but the absentee ballots are going to have an effect on your school board and your dog catcher and all the other items on the ballot.
Right, but you're not going to, and it's a matter of an outcome per election. If the absentee ballots aren't going to affect the presidential outcome, you don't fuck with them in the presidential outcome. What they establish first is what the in-person ballot total is, and then you look over and see how many absentees you have. And so if you've got a race that's decided by, let's say, dog catcher. Let's say there's a heated dog catcher contest, and only two votes separate them.
Well, then you will count the absentee ballots if there are more than two of those. But it's not gonna be with every race. Now, this year is going to be different because you're going to have massive amounts of absentee ballots, and it's conceivable that you will have more absentee ballots than you will have ballots cast in person. In which case, the canvases become all important. And you're absolutely right. What is announced on election night is not the actual outcome.
But wait a minute. What is announced on election night? Election night, generally speaking, is as each precinct counts their tally for that precinct and gets reported to the county clerk by the count at the precinct level. The ballots are then, in California, the ballots are then sent from the precinct the next morning to the county courthouse, where they are retabulated and confirmed, at least in Humboldt County, California. So you have a double count on the ballots. And if the totals match within minor computer glitch, and I'm thinking scan reader computer glitch, not touchscreen computer glitch, they are recounted, and then those totals are compiled to go to the certification process. What we have come to expect is that some millionaire on ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, etc., picks up these preliminary totals reported from the precincts. They put them into a big board, and they call the election with less than 50% of the votes counted. And that's what we have for the last 30 years taken as calling the election, combined with some exit polls which aren't done anymore. So the fact that the election is called on the day of the election is a fraud in and of itself.
And it will be especially so this time, Roger.
Yeah.
Even more so.
And I agree with Roger. I think that we're going to have to rely on the media, which I'm not comfortable with this at all. We're going to have to rely on the media to be honest, that we're really not going to know who the winner is on November 3rd. And that's the media is.
Yeah, but that's Chris's birthday.
But we have never known who the winner is on November 3rd.
It's an extremely dysfunctional fourth estate. We've usually had a sense, but this is something entirely different because of COVID, people voting by mail. It could be several days before we know, is the media going to be honest about this? Are they going to turn around and grow the fuck up and say, Trump has damaged us, he has called us all the horrible things that he's said about them? Are they going
enemy
to
of the people.
Right?
Yeah.
Right, Chris. Is the mainstream or for-profit media, as Bob says, are they going to do right by the American people and by this country and this federal republic, budding democracy, and tell the truth and say, we're not going to know at least several
more
days.
But wait a minute, you're missing my little bit of a point here. And that is what we have been told as to who won the election on the night of November 3rd is simply a statistical analysis and a prediction. Nobody knows who has won until the certified totals get submitted to the secretaries of state, which is anywhere from 10 to 25 days after the election, when the audits have been done and the recounts have been done and all the rest of it's been done, and it's a certified tally. The election night tally is not certified. It is not guaranteed. It could be way off. So what we have come with our media bullshit is simply a statistical prediction based on a very small sample of the votes cast and counted.
But I'm saying, Roger, that they can't do that this time around. The stakes are too high, and that's the problem, because we're relying on the Fourth Estate, which is dysfunctional and immature and steeped in money and everything else, to hold off. They're not going to do that. This is different this time around. We're talking about COVID-19. We're talking about a vast majority of Americans voting by mail, voting by absentee ballot. This is a different scenario altogether.
But let's be clear about one thing, please. Nitwit Nero does not deal in facts. All he does is throw garbage out for the consumption of the maggots. It bears no relationship to fact, reality, or subjective truth. So there's not going to there will be no winner certified on election night. Anybody with two functioning brain cells to rub together knows that. As an aside, Roger, at least here in West Virginia, the ballots where I've been involved with elections are not counted at the precinct level. They are transported to the courthouse and counted there, and precincts are reported at precinct level. Totals are reported out of the clerk's office. But that's what makes the canvas important, because in that kind of a situation, mistakes are easily made. But that having been said, but the bottom line is, yes, you're absolutely right about the statistical projections. And, you know, we have 1948 and Dewey defeats Truman as an example of how wrong those can go. We also have 2000. But what he's doing is setting up a coup. He is getting his maggot followers done to a tender turn, and he's working them up into a white-hot fury. He is planning a violent overthrow of the government if necessary. And like I mentioned in the filibobster last night, it's not because his fucking brand can't stand to lose. He's lost court cases all his goddamn life. It is because this election for him is an existential struggle to survive. Because if he is beaten, if he is removed from office, there will remain time enough to indict him. And in fact, I would not be surprised if he knows that he is already indicted in the Southern District of New York for being individual one. If he gets a second term, that thing, and it's unfair, but that thing times out on the statute of limitations for those federal election crimes. But yep, he could very well, but he can be prosecuted and knows he likely will. And God only knows what crimes he's committed that he knows that they're on his trail for in other instances.
This is a matter of life or death for him.
It is exactly that, Darlene. It is exactly that.
So exactly. He has to win. And this is where COVID-19 is a perfect... It is a perfect thing for him to continue to generate more chaos so that people can't see the forest for the trees. This is another one of those things, because that's what he does. He creates chaos. Every 2 minutes, it's chaos, chaos, chaos.
So just to give you an idea, when I say that he does not deal in reality, I got a clip here that Sparky alerted me to, that our buddy Dave Number 11 sent along. And here he is talking, and this is, you know, this is proof of his disordered mind. But it doesn't matter what he says, because the maggots will simply nod and grunt. I presume from the I've already heard the clip. I presume from the context that he's trying to talk about the fiction known as partial birth abortion. But his disordered mind can't get there. And instead, and you know, get the hockey puck out because and the duct tape because this is gonna make you bark. We get this.
In a number of states, the laws allow a baby to be born from his or her mother's womb in the ninth month. It is wrong. It has to change.
Let's hear that again, sports fans.
What?
You may think that you've lost your mind.
Him or her mother's wounds.
That's a fairly old quotation, by the way.
Yeah, I know it is. But this is a perfect example of what we're talking about in terms of how he is talking about his, about, you know,
I've got to be declared winner on election night or it's not a real election.
This is why he's got the maggots ready to go out and die for him. He, for all intents and purposes, has a bunch of maggot kamikaze pilots ready to go out and die for the emperor and get COVID, and he doesn't give a shit. I mean, just one more time.
Now, in a number of states, the laws allow a baby to be born from his or her mother's womb in the ninth month. It is wrong. It has to change.
It's wrong for a baby to be born in the ninth month of pregnancy. He fucking said that, okay? He really said that. And of course, the maggots just grunted and scratched themselves and nodded. I mean, I got a brand new grandbaby. My brand new grandbaby was born in the ninth month of pregnancy, but according to Donald J. fucking Trump, and the J definitely stands for genius here, that was wrong.
I'm getting tripped up on the him or her.
Well, the baby could be a boy or a girl. His or her mother's womb. He was being inclusive there. He was inclusive. He was including.
Whoa.
He was being inclusive of the gender of the gender binary, because that's all there is a binary.
Well, isn't that nice of him? Whatever. Oh boy.
So the plan is that all the maggots will go out and in-person vote and essentially throw themselves on their swords for him while the sissy liberals stay home and vote absentee. And whether it's Fox News TV Radio Rwanda or Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground, they are amplifying that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Unsolicited ballots.
Nobody's mailing unsolicited ballots. What's going out in the mail are requests for absentee ballots.
Yeah, COVID-19 presented the perfect
opportunity. Except in California.
For him.
And a few other states.
Right.
Oregon sends out ballots to everybody.
Voter gets an absentee ballot this time in California.
You all have seen where he's sent out absentee ballots with his mug on it. You've seen that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, which is highly dubious.
Why do we care? You know, here, you know, I've been listening to a lot of what. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Steve, by the way.
We know who you are.
Okay. I've been listening a lot tonight, and my big problem, or what troubles me, is we are playing on their turf. We will lose if we play on their turf. We have to think of things to do that they're not going to think of to stop to stop the Supreme Court justice.
I've been saying that. That's what I've been saying all night.
And two, and forget about the process. In that game, we've lost. Period. There is no way to win. The problem is, at least what I think, the only way you have a chance is to do what we will not do. And what I think we need to do is you get 1 million people camped outside the Senate in Washington chanting 24/7, you know, don't confirm or whatever. That's what you do. This thing about asking, you know, letting people know just how nutball this woman is, nobody cares. They don't care.
Hell, they love it. It's a nutball.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen.
That's my point. But that's my point.
I don't think that's going to happen, Steve, unless...
Darlene, that's what I'm saying.
If I may finish... I don't think that's going to happen until the election. We all know that he stole the election, and then it's going to be surrounding the White House with 1 million people, and people just don't leave, and he can't get out to even get food. His high class chefs can't even do that, or get his McDonald's. I think that's the only thing that's going to trigger that kind of revolt.
One problem with that, he has a helipad.
Yeah, he does. Well, you know, he can helipad. Wait, he's going to helipad into a McDonald's parking lot? I guess. I don't know. Maybe so. But he's a coward. Don't forget. He's a coward.
But what I'm saying, what I'm saying is... We can't play on their turf. We do, we lose.
Okay, I mean, I'll bite, Steve. What's our turf?
I just said, that's our option right now. And that's our option. In terms of the Supreme Court, our option is surround the Capitol. We're not willing to do it. So you know what? We're not willing to win. You know, I was reading Sun Tzu, and one of the tenets of the art of war is you got to surprise your opponent.
Talking about Democrats here, Steve.
Darlene, I agree with you. That's why I'm saying I think it's a lost cause. The other thing is forget it. Forget about trying to get to top the nomination. The next thing is play on our turf. What is our turf? First of all, win the election. Second of all, stack the court. And let them piss and moan and fart and burp and hem and haw and yada, yada, yada. Let them. And if we have guts, we say to them, yeah, you're goddamn right we're going to do that. The fuck are you going to do about it?
But we don't, Steve. That's the problem.
Well, then you know what it is. Then it's our problem. Then we have no one to blame but ourselves. Fine.
There's never any consequences, Steve. The Democrats never exact consequences to what the Republicans do. Never. And if they start saying, hey, look, there's going to be consequences, either impeachment of whatever Supreme Court justice they appoint or stacking the court, casting it as there's consequences, because that's the only way you can push back against a bully. These bullies they're all talking the same language. Trump is a bully, like McConnell, all of them. Ultimately, they're cowards. Ultimately, they're cowards, and that's what the Democrats have to do.
And you know what, Darlene?
They have to step outside the...
And you know what? They're cowards who are winning. They're cowards who are beating the shit out of us because we don't want to do – we don't want to step outside of the game and say, you know what? We're not playing your game. We're playing our game now. We're going
to
stop.
Right. We don't want to – yeah, we don't want to give – we don't want to exact consequences.
Why? I don't even know why that why does that even matter? Forget consequences. Forget it. We're going to do it our way. We're not going to worry about impeaching you. We're not going to worry about impeaching those judges because it's never going to happen. What we're going to do is we're going to make the game that they're playing irrelevant. If we want to win. If we don't want to win, then
I hearken back to what Bob said about the coronavirus crisis. Maybe this is our hill to climb. Maybe we need to apply that attitude to this fucking thing and nip it in the bud and everybody surround the like you were saying, surround the Capitol. Let's not let this happen. Maybe we need to climb this fucking hill.
All I'm saying is the we're look, rather than be better at the rules, let's just invent a new game. Force them to play in our turf.
Well, Saul Alinsky would say you make them play meticulously by the rules they have made, and don't let them deviate.
Bob, that doesn't that assume like some shame? That doesn't that assume that, that you that somebody is shamed in the
yeah, probably shit? It probably does. But the bottom line to all of this, and I think you're saying the same thing I've been saying, Steve. None of this to channel my inner Mayella Yule. It don't come to nothing, Mr. Finch, if we don't win the election. And it's not enough for Joe Biden to win. He must, as Tom Friedman pointed out, and I've been pointing out before that, win going away. He has to win convincingly. He has to win with extreme prejudice. But Biden's not enough. We have to hold the House. I think that's going to happen. But we have got to take the Senate. Now, we just saw, by way of example, what happened in Belarus. The president of Belarus just provided, and I'm just paranoid enough to think that this was telegraphed.
Prototype.
Vlad Putin provided a template to Donald Trump for what to do. Because Vlad Putin, for all he is to Russia, genuinely and sincerely does not fully understand the workings of our system of government, and that has often been a stumbling block to Russian efforts to undermine our processes, because they cannot resist falling back on the idea of the strong man who governs by dictate. But he thinks he has provided a template to Trump for what to do. And the Belarusian president, what's his name, Lukashenko, just inaugurated himself and drove away. And Vlad probably thinks Trump can do that too. And the question is, can he? Will we let him? There are... You know, the idea of civil war should run anybody's, with any responsible brain power, it should make their blood run cold. Because there's nothing worse. There is nothing worse. Because it destroys everything that holds a nation together. But we have probably 20% of this country that wants that right fucking now. And so they're going to have a little dress rehearsal in Portland tomorrow at a park by the river. The Proud Boys are gearing up for a brawl with Antifa, and Antifa's up for the brawl. But they're going to have competing rallies 4 miles separate, and you can bet your ass the Proud Boys are going to fucking march. And they'll go looking for that fight. So the only hope in all of this is to win so convincingly that there is no way to overcome it. And that means overcoming their, you know, whatever plans they may have for screwing up the state-by-state certification, making sure that they cannot get the thing thrown into the House of Representatives. Above all, that must not happen. Now, if you want to game out some scenario, maybe you throw it into the House and Nancy Pelosi, instead of refusing to recognize the electors that was mentioned earlier, Chris was talking about, she just refuses to recognize the legitimacy and refuses to let it be thrown into the House. And that's a whole nother mess. And again, like that war game that was played in the summer, that's another one of those things that leads to chaos and potentially blood in the streets. And I think we have to commit to avoiding that. Because, you know, it's like back when people said, well, you know, maybe if the generals would see that he's crazy and the generals would remove him. Well, if that happens, then constitutional governance is over, because there is no provision for any of that, or for that matter, any of the shit we're talking about here in the Constitution. And without the Constitution, we are nothing. And that's all there is to it.
Can I ask a question real quick?
Yeah.
How exactly would Nancy Pelosi have anything to do with the seating of the electors? The Speaker does not provide.
No. I'm talking about if the thing is thrown into the House.
Oh, I see. Okay, gotcha.
If the election is thrown into the House, she can simply refuse to call the House to order.
Yeah, pull a Mitch McConnell.
Yeah.
So that would negate the 12th Amendment? Is that what you're saying?
It seems to me it would.
That's some good news.
You know what I find very – well, the other thing too, Bob, as a corollary to what you're saying, the other thing we have to remember is that winning the election is step one. We should not be relying on anybody but ourselves.
Yep, Steve, it's just the beginning, man. We got to raise more hell after the fucking election if we win.
Yes.
Yeah. I get all that. But I'm reminded that Hitler spent hours with what? Who was it? Rudolf Hess? Was that his architect? Staring.
Yes, Rudolf Hess.
Staring at that scale model of the new Berlin that was
Albert
going to be
Speer.
Built. Albert Speer. Albert Speer.
Albert
Speer.
Yeah,
Thank
Albert
you.
Speer.
Thank
yeah. You. Yeah. Yeah. Germania. This was called Germania.
Yeah. And you know, that's a case of having the cart before the horse. We can talk about what comes after. We can make lists. I've suggested all along we need a detailed list of shit that needs fixing. But until the condition precedent is met, everything else is just mental masturbation. Win the damned election. Win the damned election handily. Win the damned election convincingly. Win it going away. Win it with extreme prejudice. Pour everything of our being into that. And you know what? What was said earlier is true. I've said of my generations that on a number of occasions, absolutely not jack shit was ever asked of my generation. God damn, 20 years ago, I'm 37 years old, 19 years ago, 38, the planes crash into the buildings, and what does George Bush tell my generation and the rest of America to do?
Go shopping.
Go shopping. Get on an airplane. Fly to Disney World.
Go to Disney World.
And this may be, this is as close to our moment as my generation may likely get. We're not going to, if it comes down to people shooting at each other, we're not going to be worth a fuck.
How do you win by extreme prejudice, though, Bob?
That was to my point, Bob. You just made my point, man.
By win with extreme prejudice, it's just another term, Darlene, for winning by such numbers that it becomes unchallengeable.
I know that, Bob, but how do you do that if you have a president who's standing there saying that the way you win by extreme prejudice is invalid? Because the only way we're going to do that is in the COVID-19 era is to vote by mail.
So
undermining that.
No, he's running a propaganda campaign. There's a difference between that. There's a difference between that and undermining. And he is focused, because he is who he is, only on his own reelection. The whole fucking world can hang fire save for that. Well, we can't be that way. We are close enough in the Senate that we can taste victory. We can, you know, Martha McSally, Cory Gardner, Steve Daines, John Cornyn, Lindsey.
Yeah, Lindsey.
Mitch McConnell his fucking self.
Susan Collins!
Susan Collins, six. One out of two of those freaks in Georgia, seven. Now, we're not getting anywhere near to a two-thirds majority, but that is enough to pass the rules when the Senate comes into session before January 20th. Please remember that, too.
Wasn't Steve saying that once we achieve that, we should keep just as much pressure on as before? I mean, that's what I took that Steve and the other gentleman to be saying.
Sure.
And that's what I said.
And within the meaning and then there's the question of what that means within the larger universe of COVID-19.
Okay. Yeah. Well, March is still.
I mean, this is all hands on deck. There's no doubt about it.
I mean, how could we not have national health care when there's a COVID-19 crisis?
Right.
And they wanted to take what little we have away.
Yeah, good point. Good point, Steve. Yeah, because someone was saying, I mean, now everyone who's had COVID-19 in theory will have a pre-existing condition. So their subsequent problems with COVID-19 won't be covered.
Right.
You know something else? Here's how I think one of the things I think we should do to approach the – we should say it. We should reframe the pre-existing condition issue. The way I think, and this is my opinion, obviously. I don't mean that to sound like a decree. Just say there should never be a pre-existing condition. Period. Stop. Here again, we're fighting on their turf. Well, we don't think we think that the government, that an insurance company shouldn't be able to deny a person with a pre-existing condition. We're going to go one further. There shouldn't be such a thing.
And again,
we also need to be careful about how we talk about nationalized health care, socialized health care, Medicare for all, single payer. All of those have slightly different connotations, and we need to be real careful with it.
And you know what? Again, this goes back to something I said a long time ago. We would be in a far better position if that and this is not to say that I don't hold socialist views. I do. I'm probably further to the left than most of the people who run around sticking red roses on their fucking social media accounts. But I am a realist. And we would be in a far better position right now than we are right now if the word socialist had never entered our lexicon, our political lexicon. We took a goddamn cudgel and handed it to the right wing and said, hit us again, I can put a little stank on it.
You know, that may be going away, but nevertheless, it hasn't helped.
No, it may be going away with younger people, but yes. Guess what? They don't fucking vote.
Amen. Amen. You get a cowbell for that. And that's another part of it.
Let me say one thing real quick. Oh, sorry about that, Bob. I interrupted you. I apologize. Yeah, I get so sick of hearing people trying to come up with reasons why voter turnout is so low in this country. You know the reason why? There is one reason. This is a time I will do a decree. People have never voted in this country. There was never these there were never Halcon days in which, oh yes, we all head on down to the polls with our thumbs in our suspenders, with our straw hats and seersucker suits. It's never happened.
We've never been that into it, except for the fact that that's by design. You know, there's probably there are probably very few people in this conversation or listening to this right now or listening to the podcast who would be able to qualify as a fucking voter in 1787. One, you have to cut out everybody but the white males. And then you have to make sure that they own sufficient property.
Does my cat count?
What about a giraffe?
In neither instance, is that enough? And you do not own Giraffe, and I'm going to tell him you said so. My God, Joey.
No, he can vote on his own.
I need the qualifications.
No, we should make it a holiday, though.
But and even if you owned property, it had to meet a certain threshold of value. And all of these things were carryovers from the Roman Republic, by the way. So that limits voting. Beginning with people like Andrew Jackson, who, for all his faults, was actually somewhat fond of the idea of democracy, and James Madison in his later years saying, we're going to have to change this shit. More people are going to have to be able to vote, or we're not going to have a country. And by people, he meant white men. More white men are going to have to be able to vote. That's why I've said for so many years, democracy in this country has been, for the most part, aspirational and not operational. How do you get a country excited about voting when most people have never been able to and didn't particularly want to? You know, for all the hell that was raised after Seneca, that thing dissolved into chaos almost immediately when the notion of black women voting was presented to the white women. And, oh, hell no! Okay? So we've never... In the 20th century, largely as a function of the efforts of FDR and the Democrats who surrounded him, the idea of voting as a civic duty did take root. The women who got the vote 100 years ago, exercised it, again, with extreme prejudice. They voted, and they voted in, that didn't matter what was up for election, they had fought for it, and they went out and voted. And the same thing happened after the Voting Rights Act. African-American people who had bled and fought and died for that right, and who are now in their 80s and 90s, will not miss an election. But the privileged white people, fuck. There's a reason, and there's the, you know, there's that other thing that I've talked about so much, the failure of transmission of transgenerational wisdom. Somehow or another, we failed to convince the next generation how important it is to vote, how much rides on it. You know, Brendan wrote in a little bit ago and said, we need to build the base. Organize, organize, organize. But the problem is, in 2020, you know, there's a difference between mobilizing and organizing. Organizing is what you do when you've got time to work with. Mobilizing is what you do when the shit has already gotten real and the dog is and the wolves are on your doorstep. We're in mobilize mode. So you're right, Steve. We've just never been that much into it. We have to change that. We frankly need a revolutionary attitude. You know, we need a modern Thomas Paine who says, now is the time for all good people to come to the aid of their country. God, I typed that phrase over and over and over again, learning to type.
Learning to type.
Well, one of the problems we've got right now with elections is that it truly doesn't matter. Roger, just to wrap up, just a second. I have to reach out and find where this was all going. We got to get people voting, but we've got to work our priorities. I mean, talking about health care, and I agree with everything Roger said a minute ago. You know, there are nuances, and that's why I brought up the word socialism. Please let's forget that word ever existed for the time being. And instead of arguing about Medicare for all versus universal single-payer health care versus hybrid systems versus, one message, one simple message that would resonate with just about any other civilized country out there. A civilized country makes sure that all of its people can go to the doctor when they're sick. That's the message. Not a mouthful of gobbledygook. Everybody needs to be able to go to the doctor when they're sick. And the ACA doesn't do it, and the Medicaid expansion doesn't do it. And frankly, we can talk about it as an election talking point, but at this point in time, it's hardly relevant. The relevance is our country is on the verge of dying. Whatever we think our democracy is near death. The Constitution, to cite that old Mormon prophecy, is hanging by a thread. And we have, and to use their terminology, we have to be not a white horse, but a goddamn thundering herd of them that can be heard rumbling across the plains from 100 miles away. That's it. That's all. There's nothing else. The checklist, we can keep working on the checklist. But the only thing that matters is winning the election by means of whatever it is that motivates our side to get out and goddamn vote. Period. Sorry, Roger.
My wife pointed out to me a while back that one of the reasons for the apathy in this country is even though we change political parties at state and federal level, there is truly no real change to the average Joe. They are all subtle. Down in Peru, when you change from one government, my wife's Peruvian, when you change from one government to the other, it makes wholesale changes in the lives of the people on the street. And truly, the Joe Jane who works at Safeway as a meat clerk, whatever, or the professor at the university, their life doesn't really change with a change in party government. There's this incredible inertia that we keep going along. Yes, we have things that change, i.e. the rich get tax breaks and the poor get screwed, but it really doesn't change the average Joe's life in this country on any election.
Right. It's the same concept as of why we have such a hard time getting climate change to take root or to get traction, Roger. You can't see the changes in day to day unless it's right up on top of you. Oh, those poor people on the Gulf Coast. Oh, those poor people who got their houses burned down. Well, your house didn't get burnt down. It really doesn't touch you. And that's what comes of having a society, a polity that has been relentlessly trained to focus only on their own good. It's the direct antithesis.
It's not climate change that caused all these fires. It's those goddamn environmentalists that wouldn't let us log and the air quality control regulations that wouldn't let us do controlled burning. It has nothing to do with climate change.
Yeah, and all that's a giant fucking lie. The fact of the matter is, before right, I mean, I know you know that. But the fact of the matter is, it is exacerbated by climate change, but the fires themselves are something that has been going on since probably before the ice sheets receded in the areas that weren't covered by ice.
And we stopped raking the forest floors.
Yeah, I knew that was coming. but I mean, it is periodically burnovers, brush fires and the like, the kind that are generated by things like lightning and not fucking idiots having gender reveal parties, they're a natural process. I mean, some of this is human intervention that isn't climate change. There are actually places where human beings are not supposed to permanently live. And at the risk of pissing people off, human beings are not supposed to build multi-million population centers in the middle of goddamn deserts. I mean, that's the first lesson from city building 101 as established by humanity itself. Harappa and Mohenjo-Daro in the Indus River Valley are exhibit one in that. The cities of Mesopotamia, Babylon, Eridu are examples of that, because you take a desert, you come in, you irrigate the hell out of it. Hey, look, all kinds of shit's growing. A couple of generations go by. Wait a minute. Why won't shit grow anymore? Oh, wait a minute. We irrigated the desert. We've salinated the dirt. And suddenly you find yourself in Idiocracy, where you've been watering. See, that's Mike Judge's genius. The backstory problem in Idiocracy is the salinization of irrigated land. And 500 years from now, it's because the idiots are irrigating the land with Brondo because it's got electrolytes, and that's what plants crave. Electrolytes are salt. And so it's actually a far more intelligent movie than most people realize, because it's a metaphor about, among other things, horrible land use. So all of these things work together. And as a consequence, you know, for as curious and clever a bunch of primates as we are, sometimes we're too smart for our own damn good. Boy, I just took off on a little ramble. I apologize for that.
But, Bob, you might want to play some games and look up the history of the Kesterson Reservoir in California. It had to do with irrigating arid lands. The runoff was pumped into a lake to be called a wildlife refuge. And, yeah, the birds came, and then they started dying with this contaminated water. Anyhow, Kesterson Reservoir, California.
Okay. And
now, on that same vein, if you go down to Corral, which is the oldest city known to man in the Western Hemisphere, in Peru, you don't build in floodplains either. You get yourself up on the slope above the floodplain and use the floodplain for your agriculture, and so your houses don't get wiped out. I'm thinking New Orleans, Sacramento, Stockton, you know, cities like that.
Just about everywhere we built a city.
Yeah, but Corral is a beautiful example of the ancient city that was built on the shelf up above the floodplain of the river that came down from the Andes, and they used the land down by the river to grow the food to support the people living in Corral.
Yeah, I'm familiar. Isn't that the culture that didn't have any walls because they had no known enemies?
Well, in the archaeological excavations of Corral, they have found no weapons of aggression.
They have found some hunting.
and they weapons, had, but and, not warfare weapons.
And they poured a great deal of their artistic energy into textiles.
Correct.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Well, hey, man, we got real esoteric toward the end there. Thanks, Roger. But that's the way these conversations work out. We go all over the place. We learn things. I learn things, at least. And it makes for a wonderful end to the week. And that having been said, I will mention that Joey and Giraffe put a kind little challenge on, not little, put a kind challenge on the table this evening, and we got $15 to go to finish it off. And it would be great if we could do that, because it would be most helpful. Thank you to Joey, and thank you to Giraffery. And remember, Joey, Lies, 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 Yeah, is not Tears for Fears. It's the Thompson Twins. But that having been said, thank you again for the challenge, and hopefully somebody's got $15 to finish the thing off and help us reach it. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to all of our subscribers. Thank you for reestablishing your subscription to our buddy Brock. Thank you for all of you who subscribe either via Patreon or via PayPal. Thank you to our a la carte contributors, and some of you do all three. Thank you. You are why this program is continuing, and less than a month away now, as of yesterday, less than a month away from our 15th anniversary in this format, and 17 overall. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Steve and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to Sparky moderating the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, as he has for oh so many years. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new Malloy, Friday edition, on the way, 9 p.m. on headon.live. And, yeah, I'm biased, but I do believe that headon.live is the very best place to go to watch, or to listen, rather, not watch, but to listen to the Malloy program. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please, if you can stay home, stay home. Stay safe, whatever you do. If you have to be out, wear your masks, wear your gloves. Don't touch your face. Wash your hands. Take hand sanitizer with you everywhere you go and use it, dare I say, religiously. Maintain your social distance the way that Paul from Parts Unknown suggests, that is, 10 feet, not 6. And above all, if someone comes toward you hollering about how if we don't know Donald Trump is the president on November the 3rd, the election done been rigged, avoid that person like the plague, because they are. And just because this program is over doesn't mean the conversation isn't going to continue. It will. We will switch from the front porch to Sparky's back porch after the broadcast ends. Have a great weekend, everybody. Back with more on Monday, and probably a boatload of them. Later.